Welcome to the We Are EMS Educators podcast. I am Dan Limmer, co-host here with Chuck Elias, and today we have Ricky Battle. Ricky is an LA County fire paramedic, the 2023 NAEMT Paramedic of the Year, quite a feat. And today we're going to be talking about precepting. But, you know, if I were to subtitle this, Chuck, I might call this The World According to Ricky Battle. I could call it The Philosophy of Ricky Battle. I could call it How to Get Along in the Fire Service and EMS. Any one of those, I think, would set this up really well. Ricky, we're thrilled to have you here. And Chuck, I'm going to hand it off to you to pop that first question out.
Rick, I think it is vital that preceptors play an integral role with educating the student with their learning and how to help them through this educational process. So I'm going to sort of give you the floor as to how do you think the preceptors, or what have you done as a preceptor that has helped these students be able to finish through class and become functioning EMTs or paramedics once they're done?
Oh, all right. Well, thank you guys for having me. First of all, it's an honor and a pleasure to be asked. So I'll jump in right in with it. For me, it be with interns as a preceptor, I acknowledge the fact that the school, whatever institution has taught them to get to this point, has taught them everything they need to know as far as they've done all the learning. So what I need to do is understand and remember that I was an intern before, and remember what that felt like, which tells me that the first thing I need to do is create an environment where that intern, he feels safe and he feels like a part of the crew immediately. And I notice there are lots of things we say in the world, and it's cliche and we say it, it's one thing to say, hey, this is a safe place. If you're going to make mistakes, here's where you make them. It's one thing to say that. But it doesn't come across. Your words don't match your actions. When the intern makes a mistake, you basically tune him up, him or her up. You give them the eyeballs, or you make them do something. You make it punitive to a greater or lesser degree, either through the way you talk to them, your body language on scene, especially if you're in front of people. So it's one thing to say it, but you actually have to do it. You have to understand that person is, regardless of whatever experience, they're entering internship where every day they feel like it is the final exam. And that's exactly the kind of energy. Rare is the intern that, even no matter how well he or she did in didactic, rare is the intern who comes out toes to the nose of the surfboard and treats it like a wave that he or she's just going to ride in, all the way to the shore, step off, grab their drink, and go lay in the sun. Very rare is the intern that comes out into internship that comfortable. The vast majority of them, they're looking at me as the preceptor, as well as, the fire station, the rest of the people, as a lot of times as a newer environment, especially if they're coming from or sponsored by or coming from a department of their own. If they're in my system, a private individual, you got to deal with a little bit of a culture, and every station has its own culture. You understand that the fact that the basics for them to become a paramedic intern, they had to be an EMT, which means they had to be an EMS, which at its base makes them family. So you treat them like family. When you correct them gently like family. You do it in the way we treat each other. You do it gently, even if you have to do it firmly. But again, they're first and foremost, they're family, regardless of the type of badge or where they work. And again, you create that environment where they feel comfortable making that mistake. And sometimes it takes a little while for them to realize that the mousetrap isn't going to slam on their fingers if they do something wrong, or they do something that they don't know why they did, or they couldn't articulate to what they believe would be my satisfaction. You let them know. I tell them, I tell my interns things like, my first day, if you ask me a question, I'm going to give you the answer. If you ask me again, I'm going to give you the answer. If you ask me a third time, you know what I'm going to do? And they always say, without fail say, you're going to let me have it. I go, no, I'm going to give you the answer. I'm going to keep giving you the answer until you get it. I go, it doesn't pay any dividends for me to write the answer on a baseball bat and then take it to you. I'm just going to give you the answer. We're going to go over these things. And there is this gig, while it's not pediatric neurosurgery, there is enough to this gig that it's sometimes, for better or worse, it's not for everybody. And there's no dishonor in that. So I keep the bar where the school tells me it should be. And I don't add much. I don't add any of my own, I believe and I think. Well, in my experience, I don't do any of those things. I keep the bar where the people with the education in learning science, in paramedicine and instruction, those people tell me what to look for. And I told the line. Anything else would be me challenging. Now, you put your own techniques here. You know, I learned this way, so let me help you learn. But for me to do anything too much more than that, it would be hubris. Now I'm going to challenge, again, those people who have the learning, in instructional science and learning science and stuff like that. And I'm going to challenge their knowledge with my 7-8 months of paramedic school and however many years I have on the job. But again, they tell me where the bar is. I play an honest hand. I play a straight hand with the intern, and I create an environment where they can relax. And once they relax, you know, we can talk science all day. The cortisol levels go down. They stop, you know, synapses fire smoothly and things, you know, whatever it is. Once a person is relaxed, things start to flow. I have never, that's where I start always, is trying to create an environment and prove to them through our interactions, my whole crew and how we deal with them. And in short order, they understand that this is a place where I can ask questions and I can ask multiple questions and I can, we can debate things and I can make mistakes and learn from them without fear of getting, you know, hoisted into the rafters and somebody taking the bullwhip to me.
Do you quiz your students whenever they're on a call with a patient, or do you let them fail, or I guess how far do you help them along with the call versus letting them learn on their own? Give me some feedback with that if you don't mind.
For me, as far as the quiz show thing, I don't tolerate it. From if you're working on my shift, and I have guys who've worked with me before who've had slightly different philosophies, but I mean, not to sound like I am the overlord, but I don't tolerate it. It doesn't do anything. Once it actually acts in it, it, to me, it reverses learning and it stagnates learning. When you're on scene, and if I let an intern do everything he thinks he needs to do, and if he's going to do something that's going to be detrimental or harmful, then I'll gently say, you know, for instance, hey, Sean, I tell you what, dude, I see where you're going with that. Tell you what, let's do this instead. And then we just do it. Otherwise, if you start, well, what else were you thinking? What are your differential diagnoses? Well, why would you do that? When you start quizzing, first of all, it shows the patient, first and foremost, that he's dealing with somebody who's in the learning process. And depending on the patient, sometimes they have feelings about that. They don't want to be, some of them are okay with it, but there are patients who don't want to feel like they're being trained on. So it shakes the faith of the patient in that individual. So now that relationship is broken down. So no matter how long that intern is going to be with that patient, depending how what the call is going to be, that trust has already started to erode. And once you start asking, basically playing quiz show with the intern, his stress level goes up. Now he's not even worried really so much. I'll give him the benefit of doubt, saying he's 50% worried about what the right answer actually is. And then the other 50% is worried about what the answer I want to hear, because sometimes they don't understand that following the policy is always the right answer, always the right answer. But they may have seen, based on my experience, me or somebody, or seeing someone else do something a little bit different, and they're thinking, well, does Ricky want the salty medic, you know, crusty guy answer, or does he want the straightforward policy answer? So again, my wordy way of saying, you derail their train when you start asking questions, and it never fails. I've never seen that ever happen. And the intern turns to you smoothly and starts rattling off his list of, you know, other pre-hospital considerations. They give you the eyes. They go, and they pause. The whole call freezes. And even if that happens for even a few seconds, everyone on the scene is now looking at the intern. They're looking at me. The patient is looking at what's going on. So the quizzing on scene during the call pays no dividends to me. No dividends for the patient. No dividends for the crew members or the intern, especially not for the intern. If everything's going okay, and I usually go, okay, you know, what the intern is done with his assessment, I go, right on, Jeff, we're all good? And he goes, yeah, I think that's it. I think that's it, Ricky. I say, okay, no, what? I'm going to ask a couple questions. And then I ask whatever questions I think I would want to ask or I think that he should have asked. I just go ahead and ask him. There's nothing that I can do to that intern that would be worse than what an intern will usually put himself through if he feels he's missed something. All the yelling is just, it's overkill. And it breaks down that relationship between the intern and the preceptor where you're just screaming at him. I don't need to do that. I don't need to do that. If I ask a question, the minute I start asking three questions, and they're not abstract questions, make sure that they're not my own personal branded questions. I ask questions that should have been in his part of his assessment tree for that particular patient. So he missed, then he knows, oh my God, Ricky just, oh my God, I should, oh my God, I, you know. So I already know that in his head, he is already, for lack of a better term, flogging himself senseless because in his mind, or his or her mind, forgive me, I keep saying his, it's my default, his or her mind, Ricky, his preceptor has finished his assessment for him. There's nothing more I could do for that intern, you know, for lack of a better term, to punish him or cement that into him than he's going to do for himself. And rarely do I have to do it more than once. And I don't do it with any attitude because I already know. And I don't really, and I expect him to miss a few. So the odd thing would be for him to nail it and me to have to go ahead and, you know, we just go ahead and shake out our capes and stroll back to the jet and take off. That's rare. Most of the time they're going to miss them. I expect them to. So I missed them, you know. You know, it'd be naive of me to think that they're going to nail it. So
is that something you start the day off with your student interns and say, I know you're not going to get everything right. Don't be ashamed if I'm finishing the questions, because these are questions that need to be asked based on how the patient's presenting to us. I think that can be very helpful for the student. It gives them that, like you said, that safe place for them to learn.
Yeah. And I do that. Maybe in different language, but I let them know that I let them know off the bat that there'll be no, I tell them what my expectation, what my philosophy is. There'll be no quizzing on scene. If there's something you didn't do and I need you to do it, I'll just ask you to do it. No different than I would any other family member, you know, crew family, because that's what they are, is crew family. No different than I'd ask anybody else. Hey, brother, could you do that for me? Hey, sis. Hey, Ron. Hey, Sarah. Hey, can you get that blood sugar for me? Hey, you know what? I forgot to get a blood sugar. Can you get that for me? I would just ask them. I would just ask for it, and they just learn by doing. There's again punitive measures, whether it be in tone, affect, or just outright just berating them verbally. It pays no dividends. You create the last thing we want. Because our culture for a long time has been like this. We don't want abused, how's the term go? Abused children of abused parents, because in the line, it just keeps playing out down the road, down the road, down the road. We're trying to break that cycle every intern we get. But I do tell them, I go, there'll be no quiz show. If I hear anybody start to quiz, I shut them down. I firmly believe it pays no dividends. Well, I let them know that when you're done, I'll ask you, hey, are you good? We're all good? And he goes, yeah. And I'll tell him that I may ask a couple more questions. Don't take offense. They're just questions I think need to be answered. They always recognize the questions as questions that are in their assessment tree. By the time they come to us, they've already, you know, they even if they don't have their A&R cards, assessment and report cards memorized, they know enough of them that they know these are questions that, oh, I missed that. Oh, I missed that. Oh, I should have asked that too. So I let them know what they can expect. I also let them know that if in the event they get to a point where they stall or stagnate, we have a code word that we use, or a code phrase. If they get to a point in their assessment where they can no longer go or they feel stuck, they just look back and go, hey, Ricky, what do you think about this? Or they go, hey, Sean, what do you think about this? They go, what do you think about this? And I go, oh, you know, dude, I think, it creates a seamless transfer between preceptor and intern. It keeps the call flowing and the the primary thing, patient has no idea. They think he's being, now what's what I'm looking for? Now we're round table. We're talking about it. Things are happening. We're bringing in, we're more minds, better outcome. That's what the patient sees. So, and there's no stopping, no freezing, no stagnating. And the intern can take a step back for a minute, let me do my thing. And I also let him know that the minute they're ready to jump back in, just ask a question. The minute you ask a question, I'll fade back out and let him take it over. So at all times, the patient feels like they're being cared for. There's no stuttering. They don't think that they're being trained on. And it gives the intern, if he drops the reins, he can get back on and, get his gallop back and join the call again. So I think it works for everyone that way.
I've got a new title for this, Chuck: Zen and the Art of Precepting. might be a good one. What about, Ricky, the big one? What about the PD code? What about the multiple trauma in the middle of the big intersection in town? How does precepting change when it's the big one, when the stakes are even higher?
The intern understands, we make him understand that at all times, the learning, as high a priority that is, and nothing takes greater priority than patient care, whether it be the full arrest or the multi-system trauma, those kind of things, the MCI. We try to go over those things before before those things happen. We discuss trauma. Those are part of his or her drills leading up to his or her completion of the internship. But if we get something, that intern understands that God love him or her, it's going to be quick. So what the assumption is that the assumption and the hope is that we get several, because we know the first two are going to be rough. But the intern gets because it's of the utmost necessity to be this way, the intern gets a very small, very finite amount of time to get his ball rolling and then to keep it rolling, because patient care is of the utmost importance. If that individual falters at all, we will step in, and it won't be brutal. We'll just move in, and that intern will understand. And once we've moved in, then the call is now, we're handling the call because the more critical a call is, I no longer have as a preceptor. Now, if I'm running the call now, I no longer can trust that I will come to a point where I have the time or the ability, with everything else I'm looking at, to notice when I, or get checked to see if I have a feeling that that individual is ready to get back in. Now we're talking patient care, and if something happens, if it's a beautiful thing, and I notice that he or she's ready to jump back in, I'll go, hey, I'll give him some tasks, we'll get him going, and then if it's very critical, then we just take it over and we get it done. And then we just talk about it afterwards. We run simulations. We do those kind of things. And hopefully if we get more, slowly they'll be able to, the next time it comes, they'll be able to get it going a little bit faster and keep it going. If, what was I going to say? My interns, once we do these scenarios over and over and over again, if we're not getting, if we're slower, if there's specific things we want to work on, the intern knows that at any time, and this goes back to letting the intern know that that he or she is part of the crew, and that their family is. Once the county, my entity, gives me an intern, to me, it's always my duty to whoever the county shakes hands with, that is also my deal. So part of the precepting with the hospitals and the intern. And so it is as an agent of the county, when they make a deal, I enforce it. I toe that same line. So from the minute I get an intern, I let him know my time on the clock is no longer it was never my time. It's the county's time. So as the county's time, now it is your time. Whatever I'm doing, doesn't matter. We will, outside of our normal EMS duty, the EMS and fire duties, whatever I'm doing, you come get me. I told him it would hurt me. I would have some strong feelings if I knew that there was something you wanted to work on, something you wanted to talk about, something you wanted to get off your chest. And because I happen to be in the blue chair or doing house dues or on the computer doing my target solutions, computer learning, whatever, I let him know. I would have some very strong feelings if I thought that you didn't come to me when you wanted to. The moment it hit you or struck you, you didn't come to me because you didn't want to disturb me. I go, this is not my time. And I go, and that's the way I want it. This is your time. You are the, you know, for the county, you are my responsibility. And it behooves me to see you get to the end of this with everything you need so that you can be successful and keep and maintain my unbroken record of never having to dismiss or fail an intern. So
whenever I started in EMS many years ago, sort of the culture was do everything the preceptor says, whether that's cleaning up. It was almost like they were given me or given mundane tasks just to give tasks, or you're going to do the charting, or you're going to do the scut work because I'm higher than them. Thoughts on that, or do you see that still happening today in EMS, especially in the precepting side?
I see it happening here and there. I hear about it here and there. To me, that's hazing. And anyone who knows me, hazing to me is the same as bullying. There's no difference. And the two things that me as a person, personally, the two things that I do not tolerate at all are bullying and thieves. So my family knows it. My kids know it. They know that. Daddy, if you ever want to see the primeval side of Ricky Battle, that'd be when I have to deal with bullies and thieves. It's hazing. It's intolerable to give them the scut work because they were new or because you're new. You have to ask yourself, what are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to, I don't even have the words for what you would be trying to accomplish there. I tell my interns when they come in, I go, along with my other speeches, as you can already tell, I can be pretty wordy. I apologize. But part of my spiel to my interns is that you are a grown man and a grown woman. I go, you are adults. I go, and you're professionals. By the time you get to me, you are at the very least professional EMTs. You are EMS professionals and grown and adults. No one in this whole building is more invested in your success than you. So I am here to facilitate and do the thing and try to bridge the gap between what you learned in school and get you comfortable with all the skills up into including leadership, running the scene, as well as all the tactile skills. Providing the care to the patients you're going to be dealing with. That being said, as an adult, I have my duties. Your duty is just to do whatever it is you think you need to do to, whether you need to be studying. If you're the type of person who, like me, when I was an intern, who shows up with a nice big roll away suitcase full of stress and everything, just packed it, ready to go. If you're that person, and you need 30 minutes on the treadmill just to, burn up that cortisol. As an adult, you do what you need. Those are your duties. Do the things that facilitate your learning and your development in this thing we call internship. My duties, that's the county pays me to clean the toilets, to do all that stuff like that. If we're not to the point in the internship where you have to do the reports, then you don't have to worry about the reports. Everything that you'll be doing is for that. And along with that, if I'm not going to be running around looking to see where the intern is, what's the intern doing? What are you up to? What's going on? You should be this. You should be that. If we've identified no issues in your internship, if you're moving at the pace and the rate that the paramedic school has taught me, you should be moving at. I look at the date. I see how long you've been with me. I look, the paramedic school taught me that this is the way an intern should be performing at this point in their internship. If everything's cool, then everything is cool. I'm not worried about it. If you need to take a nap, you need to do whatever. As an adult going through this, like I said, no one's more invested in this than you. I trust that you'll do all the things you need to do to help you get, to make it, make this better, or make this fruitful process for you. If something comes up and we've identified an issue that we're having to work on, then I may come get you. Hey, Sarah, what do you think what do you think we go over, traumatic full arrest? How about we, that IV on that 1-year-old, was pretty, I could see you, I could see you had it, but your hands were shaking on that one. Let's talk about that. Let's go over here. Let's run down to the EDAP and at Downey and see if, you know, let's walk around. Maybe, you know, maybe you're a little shaky around kids. Let's get you unshaky. You know, if I haven't identified an issue, then there's no issue. If you haven't brought an issue to me, then there's no issue. I leave you alone. As for what you said, that is hazing. And that, I can't say enough about how against that I am and how vehemently opposed to that kind of treatment I am.
Let's take it one step further. Let's talk about other things that preceptors do that are not productive. As somebody who's been out there for a while, you've seen things. When you were being precepted in an internship, you may have seen things. Of course, we'll get into, I think, your philosophies for survival as a student. Well, I want to shift to that in a bit. But before we finish up the preceptor part, what are some things that you've seen or experienced that preceptors should avoid?
Preceptors, I've seen preceptors yell and use profanity with interns on scene, in front of the patient, in front of the patient's family, when the intern didn't move fast enough, when the intern didn't answer a question on a quiz show, and the intern didn't answer the question fast enough. I haven't seen in a long time. These are from, you know, back when I was a new medic, and these guys were known to be the crusty, you know, guys from the busy houses. I've seen behavior where preceptors have gotten physical with patients in front of the intern. I don't know whether or not he was promoting that or saying the intern should handle it that way, but he allowed himself to lose control in front of the intern. So you lose credibility. So there's nothing after that. What are you going to say to the intern? You should do this. You shouldn't do that. Well, I just saw you knee drop a guy. Because you thought he spit on you. So everything that's coming out of your mouth now is tainted now. So I've seen those kind of things. I had the honor and the pleasure to, UCLA Paramedic School, I was part of the cadre that when there was an issue in the field with an intern, I was part of the cadre who would go out when whether the intern or field personnel requested a ride along for an evaluation, a field evaluation of an intern's performance. I was one of the individuals they would send out there as it working for the paramedic school, not in the capacity for LA County Fire. This is off my off duty time for the paramedic school. I've seen things like to the other flip side of the coin, maybe not what I consider benign, but a lot more benign than knee dropping or yelling obscenities at an intern in front of the whole crew on the call. Things that I had to make guys understand that were not cool. Like when the intern is doing his drug drill, if he says something that's wrong, you have syringes full of saline flushes and you squirt them. You squirt them in the face with saline water when the guy gets the question wrong. And, you know, things like that. What else have we? And I've actually seen a preceptor grab an intern by the collar and shove him into the car because the intern I could see him that the intern just, there was just a lot of bodies around. The intern just was trying to figure out where he could fit in, and he just wasn't moving fast enough for the preceptor, and grab him by the collar, give him a little shake and toss him into the car to get after it. So I've seen some, and these are all with a full crew around, which means I have individuals in that acting in the capacity of a preceptor who are doing unconscionable things in front of an officer. We have a captain on scene, and I'm a firefighter paramedic. Some of these preceptors I've been on a lot longer than. Some of them have been on a lot longer than me as paramedics and preceptors. But at any rate, I have an officer there, a captain, a fire officer there, who is seeing the whole thing, and so it puts me in a position like, do I have to do this man's job? Do I have to do the captain's job now? And because the captain is so unwilling to do his job, if I take that step and try to shut this down and I get pushback, now I know I can't rely on the captain to back me up to do the righteous thing. I'm going to be the one man out there trying to do the right thing. Now, I do say stuff, or I say stuff to the captain, and then I either excuse myself and make a formal report to the captain. There's things I have to do. Otherwise, if I don't say something or do something, I'm complicit in the behavior. But I mean, I don't think I've ever heard anything come of it, or it go up channels. And because I'm in the fire service, you move through channels. So yeah, to make it short, I've never seen anything really come from it. But to answer your question, I've seen some pretty ridiculous things that weren't done to me. I didn't have that experience as a intern. But at the same time, I'm a grown man, so there's any number of those things. I mean, to put it mildly, I would have had some very strong feelings about that, to the point that there may have been some furniture getting moved around in those rooms had someone done any of those things to me, any of those things. So, but an intern, because of the power dynamic, interns want to be like us. They want to be like us. They want to get through it. They think that's the way it's supposed to be, so they allow it to be. And if they're not old enough or strong enough or accomplished enough in their own lives, again, that power dynamic can crush them in a position where they just are subservient to a fault to us, the water walking, star moving paramedics.
It's a curse. It's obviously a curse to do that.
It hits a double-edged sword, to say the least.
Let's go back to the intern and your experience getting along as an intern, good intern stories. What advice would you have for the intern or for the educator listening to this? What would you tell them to tell their students to go out and have a good experience?
I think that's a tough one, because you get a batch of interns and you send them to so many different places, and their experiences can vary so wildly and so differently. It's tough. I believe that a lot of times, and I can only speak for my service, and I don't mean to badmouth it, but an ace is ace, a spade is spade. Play a straight hand. You got to tell the truth. A lot of paramedic training institutions and paramedic schools are, for lack of a better term, are held hostage because they need the internship spots for not just the interns who are being sponsored by that particular fire department or entity that they're trying to get the internship spots from, but they need for other people, just like for UCLA, private. They have a lot of private students who need the fire service, so which needs the internship spots, so puts the school in a position where they have to, on some degree, feel like they have to, for lack of a better term, appease the fire service. Otherwise, the fire service gets angry, and then they won't give me, they'll only give me internship spots for just their guys, knowing that how are we going to make more paramedics without internship spots. So to that end, the paramedic training institutes of the schools can't promise the interns that they will have their back all the time, all the way. They have to negotiate on things that should be non-negotiable. Every once in a while, you'll have in the fire service, you'll have a chief or a captain who's in a position of power, paramedic liaisons who share that vision. But the vast majority of them don't want any static. They don't want any wrinkles. So the interns have to, as a paramedic body, you should be able to tell an intern, hey, fire departments, the EMS agencies who are precepting, providing the preceptor, the internship spots, should make it known that to their own employees, especially the preceptors, that when we get somebody from, education from the paramedic schools, that is an extension of that environment, that university, that collegiate. Anything that was not cool in the classroom is not cool in the firehouse. The hazing. If you think just because now you're in the fire service now, kid, you're in the NOM now, son, this is how we do it. I hear it. That is you in preceptors and the entities that employ them, that needs to be clear to them that that is an extension. Anywhere else, if you move, if you're in the educational process, if you're at a university or a college or trade school, when you move out to do some body of work or learning outside, then that that is still your behavior as well as how you're treated. The treatment is an extension of that place. So, as to get back to the root of your question,
it sounds like my students are going to come out with Stockholm syndrome. You know, there's obviously culture issues, you know, in any department to do that. And I don't think any one department or any one culture or state or anything else is going to be that much different. You know,
and I don't think so. Yeah. And no, it breaks my heart to say so.
Okay. And I think we can move on. How does the student get along? Right. We've had a lot of conversations about how you get along, some of your philosophies. I'd love to give that earthy, genuine, you know, granted they're going to come in, you know, spit-shined and idealistic. I'm not sure how they'll be spit out.
Yeah.
But what would a student do to make it a good experience and learn, assuming that there's at least some desire on the preceptor's part?
For the intern, I would... and again, ideally, to get to this point, they've been at EMT for a little bit of time. I would tell them to embrace that they're entering an environment just like the one they came out of, just that's now at a higher level of embrace the controlled chaos of it. Understand that working hard and having your purpose nailed firmly to the sticking point sometimes is not going to be enough. Not that anyone's going to be able to tell you what's enough, but to be prepared for that. I would tell an intern to understand that to decide where their boundaries are in the beginning, the things they're willing to tolerate that are outside, you know, they already know the learning process. They already know what they got to deal with that. But as far as attitudes, behaviors, things like that, what they're willing to tolerate and then try to stick firm with that. If they have to do a little, you know, massaging here and there, but they can do that massaging from a point that they've already identified in their mind that this is where I'm going to draw the line. And then when something comes up to challenge that, you go from there, but not having deciding what kind of, how much you're going to take or not take, put you in a point to where when things do come up, you feel like you're just adrift and you're just pulling stuff out of your bottom. And it puts you in a position where once it's all said and done, you question possibly your own values, it affects your self-esteem. And those are those little scars, enough of them over time, you know, those things will eat at you. Be open to constructive criticism. Understand that you're entering a culture that is notoriously, from the day of its inception in the 1800s or the 70s, whenever we started filling buckets with water and tossing them on burning sticks, has been rough. We're rough with each other. Understand that, but understanding that doesn't mean that anyone expects you to tolerate anything that you consider unfair treatment. And the first person I would say take it up with will be the school, your educational institution. Before you go to someone who may not, because they're an officer or they were weaned in that environment. I'm not entirely sure if you would find it may be a bit to hope for that you'd find a sympathetic ear. You may find just a defensive one. So I would say if you did have an issue, bring it up with the school. With the educational institution that trains you. There's a saying in jiu-jitsu, as part of the saying is tap when you're learning jiu-jitsu, you're going to tap early and you're going to tap often while you're learning. I mean, somebody's going to put you in a position where you have to tap out. So don't understand when you've got to the point to where being able to deal with this particular situation is outside of your scope. You either don't have the skills, the actual skills, or you don't have enough gas in your tank after whatever happened, to deal with that, you tap, you go, you know, go to the referee, let them know you're with the referee again, being in the school, and let them know what the issues are.
Ricky, you've been doing this for many years, somewhere between 15 and 20 some years as a preceptor, and your energy that I'm getting from you today. Was it always like that? Like, how do you keep that energy for being a preceptor to be so upbeat and and motivational for these students? I mean, I find it phenomenal. I mean, were you always like that? Or how do you keep that energy level up today, 15, 20 years into your career?
You know what? I've always been, some of them have just been my personality. I've always been a joker, a talker, a laugher. A day with me at the station, you hear me, I have music, a little, anytime of the day or the night, you could say, what's in your head right now? And I could tell you the song that's bouncing around in my head. My wife has tried to catch me before, she's done it, and there's always, I can tell you in a minute, that this song. And I'm the guy, I walk around the station, I sing, I'm in the shower, I'm singing, I'm chatting, I'm talking trash, I'm joking. I just like to have fun. That's just my natural personality. I also tend to be a people pleaser. So while I like to think in a good way, meaning I want everybody to have fun, you know, we're going to smile, we're going to joke, we're going to talk $100 worth of junk on the way to the call, but we're going to give them $1 million worth of customer service once we're there. You mentioned earlier that I had the honor and the pleasure of winning the paramedic of the year award from NAMT. And we joke, and I tell guys, I go, yeah, every once in a while, you know, certain calls, I go, and then I'll say some goof, I'll goof on something. They go, oh, that doesn't sound very POTUS. And I go, you know what? I got nominated. I won the award for the things I say on scene, not necessarily for the things I say on the way to the call, you know? So, you know, and people ask me what that mean. I go, well, no matter how well constructed a boiler is, no matter how shiny it is, no matter cutting edge, every boiler has a relief valve for the unexpected right fluctuations in pressure that you can't foresee. No matter how shiny, no matter how well built it is, you go all the way back to the beginning of the constructions, you know, when the first inception of the boiler, and there's always then, and as there's now, there's a relief valve on there again to mitigate those unexplained or unexpected fluctuations of pressure. And that's what we do on the way to the call, when we goof off and we talk trash and yada yada. But once you do that, you get on scene and you make sure that person thinks that the LA County Fire, Georgia Fire, whatever fire EMS you're with, you make sure that you try. The mission is that when you leave that person or that person's house or family or that call, that they think that your entity is the best thing since sliced bread and indoor plumbing. So for me, I just want people to be happy. My either healthily or unhealthily, me particularly, I'm a pretty decent guy, but I think I'm a pretty decent individual. But by doing these things for these individuals I'm called to do, my self-esteem is tied very closely to that. Is the trust for me, the understanding that just how awesome this gig is for all of us. I mean, at a time where people, we've heard it said many times before, I never forget that people call us for things that it doesn't matter for that person. It doesn't matter how cute they are. Doesn't matter how ugly they are. Doesn't matter how tall they are, handsome. Doesn't matter how much money they have. When all the things that a person thought meant something, they place value on, when they thought that meant something, when none of those things can matter, none of them matter, I can walk in the door, you know, with my education that the county is good enough to provide me with, and my experience, I can come in there and matter when all the things that they put so much value on in the past can't help them. I can come in there and make the save, or I can come in there and make it, even if I can't remove the issue, if I can't stop the snow, you know, stop the snowball, at least I can keep it from rolling any further down the hill. I can make an impact, a positive impact. And that's an awesome, powerful thing. And I didn't have that before the county, you know, enabled me to do that. They trained me, and so I have a duty to do everything I can to make sure that I do my job the best that I can, as well as every day I see things in my professional life that make me realize that no matter how bad a day I'm getting, no matter how much of an inconvenience something may be, I go on people every day who they're just waking up in the morning is an inconvenience to some of them. They're going through, and it sounds cheesy, and I know we say it, we put it on EMS gift cards and stuff like that, but every day you'll see, you can see 1,000 things on this job that'll break your heart. And right after each one of those 1,000, there's another 1,000 that'll make you smile and bring a tear to your eye. So, it's, how do you not love that? Me personally, I have a GED, and I have 7 months of paramedic school, and I have the trust of the community. Where's a guy like that going to go and have people love you up and treat you like I invented fire, basically, when they're at their lowest? Where are you going to go to get that, man? And it's different than your other places. This, when they see us coming, that comes from their marrow. They're not just happy to see us. They're happy to see us. They have no idea about me, but they're gonna open up their home. They're gonna hand me their kid. They got bad stuff hanging. They got bad habits, and I'm privy to all that. I see it all. But they trust me. I mean, where else is a guy like that, like me, gonna go and get that kind of consideration and that kind of love? It's easy for me to be happy. I'm, and to all my brothers and sisters out there who are volunteers, there's nothing stronger than the heart of a volunteer. I am lucky and blessed to be compensated for what I do. I do a job, I get paid to do a job that I would do for free. You know what I'm saying? But I get paid to do it. So who am I? Who am I to have anything other than a smile on my face every day I come here? Sorry, I'm getting a little choked up. But who am I to have anything, to feel any other way than how I feel right now about this gig?
You know, Chuck, I was just going to say, we're getting, at time when we normally end the podcast, but if I could have come up with a better finish, Chuck, I couldn't have planned it as well as what we just heard. It's something that a student would want to go and see. It's something that a patient would want to see coming in their house. And I think that we've inadvertently, but very powerfully, wrapped up with the fact, and we've seen it from Ricky through this whole thing, that it's about the attitude. We talk about affect in education, but the truth is, I think we've seen that very powerfully here. And as we wrap up, I just think this is a great example. And I'm not sure anybody's going to listen to this and ever doubt for a second why you became paramedic of the year.
Thank you guys for having me. It's an honor, pleasure to talk to you guys. To everybody who may hear it and listen, God love you guys. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Try to give all you got, but try to keep, try to save a little bit for yourself at the end. At the end of this gig, there's got to be something left for yourself. So again, and the smiles, the day-to-day smiles, I think that helps save a little bit of yourself every call. So be safe, take care of each other, and much love to all you guys.
And to you, the world according to Ricky Battle, I think would be a better place to have more of this. So from Chuck and I, Dan Limmer, thanks for listening to another episode of We Are EMS Educators, and we hope that you'll be listening to us again soon. Y'all take care.